Well, the crazy thing was down here today, it was crazy pouring rain when I was running this morning, and now it's gorgeous and 65 and sunny. Anyone? Did I go away again?
No, you're still there. No, we heard it.
Okay.
And we're all very impressed with running in the rain.
Oh, I love running in the rain. It's my favorite thing. Truly it is.
It is pretty nice, actually.
Maybe not the favorite thing. It's pretty nice. Anyway, hey, everybody. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's Friday. Welcome back to Make Me Smart.
Yay. I'm Molly Wood. It's Happy Hour Friday. Economics on tap. Yay. Friday.
Wow.
We have the live stream up and running. Thanks to those of you joining on YouTube. Our friends on the YouTubes are not messing around in the cocktail department. I was just watching it for the sort of the few minutes before we got started here. And it's like Boulevardier, Grey Goose Martini, super fancy mocktails. Like, people are not messing around. And I'm a little embarrassed to report that I didn't even have time to make a fancy mocktail because I've been glued to CNN all day, other than writing my show. And so I'm literally having like a lemon LaCroix in a mason jar.
Yeah, the really sad part is that I've got stuff to do this afternoon, and so I'm having a Perrier. I got stuff to do. I have to drive, and whatever. So,
you know what? Let's just call it Fizzy Water Friday. It's a new thing.
It really bums me out because look, as we have talked about before on this podcast, I don't get a lot of time to drink, mostly of my own choosing. I understand that.
Yeah.
And these Friday afternoon sessions have been nice for me, but you know what? Fridays will come around again, and also, actually, after I get home tonight, I can have a couple. Anyway,
it's solidarity
with those who are doing Dry February. There you go.
So there
it's
going to
be fine. That's
We're
right.
both stop, doing stop Dry whining. February, and it's
stop
great.
Stop whining.
My news item is totally related to my Dry February, which I know it doesn't seem like right now, but you'll see.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
We're going to do the news a little half full, half empty. Just as I was coming in, I sort of have two items today, but I've decided to stick with my primary item because it has been a topic of some interest for me for a long time, and that is what is happening with the mail. And I say it's related to my Dry February because I signed up for one of those little like mocktail, send you a pack of fancy mocktail things like at the beginning of February, which is now apparently not going to arrive until like sometime next week, thereby being like halfway done. I'm halfway done with Dry February before my like fancy mocktails come, which who has 2-week shipping at all anymore, except that apparently it's everybody, and it's going to continue to get worse because the Washington Post, with late breaking scoop today about how Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, who, still there, is moving toward a strategic plan that is essentially boils down to slower mail and higher prices. Is not ideal.
Just amazing.
Yep. Like, there has already been, obviously, we know, all kinds of trouble. First class mail in particular, I think one of the things he's going to do is say it can't go by airplane anymore, meaning it will be as slow as trains and trucks. Yeah. And that class of mails already only has like a 38% on-time record. What's interesting, and I learned in this Washington Post story, because that caused almost everybody to be like, but why does he still have that job? And the answer is that there is a Postal Service Board of Governors.
Yep.
And that Postal Service Board of Governors is in charge of determining who is the Postmaster General. That job is supposed to be insulated from presidents who want you to mess with the mail for any reason. Currently, it is mostly Trump appointees on the Postal Service Board of Governors. There are 4 open seats, and Democrats have been pressing the Biden administration to hurry up and fill those seats so that they can discuss leadership of the Postal Service.
Isn't it amazing that of all the things a new president is being pressed to do, unboogering up the post office's board of governors is like a thing that gets a lot of pressure? It's just insane that that's the state of play. That's the state of
play. I know. Yep.
Wow.
But Postal Service thing, still going.
Yeah.
It's still going, friends.
Yep, and we'll be fine.
But I felt like that was like the central question, and I was happy to see that the Post answered it because I, like everyone, was like, wait, that guy still has his job? I don't understand.
Yep.
I also want to point you to, I am clearly not the only person, and I think borrowed it from like a Bloomberg piece, who was like, you know, it just seems to me that it's very common for Elon Musk to tweet some things and for then him to make money off of the stocks that get sold as a result of him tweeting that thing, or in this case, Bitcoin. And then now there is, in fact, a website called elonstocks.com, which is like a ha-ha funny. When Elon mentions a stock in a tweet, we'll send you a text. Stonks to the moon. So everyone can
don't
buy. I'm just saying.
On what Elon Musk tweets, people. Just,
I just wonder at what point. I mean, the SEC is apparently already looking into the Bitcoin purchases and the tweets related to it. But I just wonder at what point is the SEC going to have to start getting involved in Twitter? Because it just, you know, Elon notwithstanding, there were questions about President Trump doing this, or like, oh, the stock market goes up every time they announce a tariff deal with China. Like, we fixed
members of members of Congress. I mean, you know,
members of Congress. Yeah. I mean, it's like Twitter, but for pump and dump. Maybe it's time to have a talk.
I was just looking up Bitcoin, $47,369.50 right now per Bitcoin.
I know. A friend texted me today and was like, when should I sell my Bitcoin? And I was like, dude, I have no idea. I have no idea.
When,
like,
when did you get
once
in?
Elon tweets about it, is it over?
And then figure it out. Yeah, I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, I just keep
Elon getting in. I feel like it's such a mixed bag that I'm just like, dude, I want nothing to do with this. But anyway, also,
so
by the way,
Sarah
somebody
Schlosser
in the
in the comments. Yeah, I was just going to say he's just playing with all of us, Sarah Schlosser.
Yep, exactly. And then somebody else, I don't know who, said Elonks. Matthew Adamczyk, Elonks.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Dunks in the Elon. That's cute. That's cute. And also Mark Carr pointing out Tesla also doesn't match their employees' 401ks.
Oh, I know. Joseph Kozlowski. Good note. But Kai, you can't not listen to someone that's got as much control over something as Musk does. Same rationale for having to follow Trump, whether you agree with him or not. No, I never followed Donald Trump. And once again, do not base your investing decisions on Elon Musk. He doesn't really have that much control over things. He has no control over, I don't know, reality, you know.
I feel like that argument alone is enough for me to be curious about how the SEC is going to treat Twitter in the future.
Yeah.
Like, what does it mean when, you know, it's one thing if somebody goes on CNBC, they're giving stock advice, but somebody just tweeting and people doing what they say because they're super famous and it's a little bit of a cult of personality. What does that mean? Maybe it means nothing. I don't know. I just think it's really interesting.
That's the same thing as Reddit, right? I mean, you know, people go on Reddit and say, hey, buy GameStop. And so somebody takes his rent money. And I know not everybody did this, right? And does that and loses it. And should the SEC be on Reddit?
Yeah, fair.
I don't know. Okay, so anyway, I've got two. One's a point of personal privilege. And then the other one's a substance. We'll do substance first. We have talked on this podcast before many times about Facebook, but also specifically about the Facebook Oversight Board, which some are calling Facebook Supreme Court, which is going to have an incredible amount of power, has an incredible amount of power. And the next big decision they're going to make is whether Donald Trump should be back on Facebook. And I want to commend everybody's attention a story in the New Yorker by Kate Klonick, who's a law professor, about the making of that body. And she got some degree of access inside Facebook. And I will confess here to not having read this whole piece yet, but it's super interesting and it's super important. And look it up. Look it up. Kate Klonick, Inside the Making of Facebook Supreme Court, Annals of Technology.
Yeah, it's an outstanding long read. It's a long read. Sit on down with your mocktail and dig into it. But it is really interesting. And honestly, I mean, everything about that is so... She touches on what I think is so great is like the faux self-importance of even establishing a board like this and assuming there has to be a pseudo-governmental process to what is ultimately like a guy in over his head who won't really listen to people and so punted his decisions. I mean, it's like it's fascinating. It was really good.
It's wild. It's wild. Mm-hmm. It's the whole thing is just so wild. I'm becoming very, I don't know. Never mind. That's a topic for another podcast. Anyway, so read that article.
It's the end of a long week.
Also, and this is assuming everybody can hear me and that my internet hasn't dropped out. I just want to bring this up. And this is from Ars Technica. And I'm just going to read you the first several lines, or I will paraphrase them. When 90-year-old Aaron Epstein bought a Wall Street Journal print ad to complain about his slow AT&T internet service, the impact was immediate. He got calls from reporters. He got on Colbert's Late Show, blah, blah, blah. Networks interviewed him. Now, barely a week later, Epstein's home in North Hollywood, California, has AT&T fiber service with unlimited data and advertising speeds of 300 megabytes in both directions. Let me just say that I've been complaining on my public radio program about my home internet service for lo these many months. Nothing. Bupkis. Zippo.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all I'm saying. We all were here last Friday when my internet just went. So, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
Well,
that's
maybe.
It. I'm only a little bitter.
Full page ad is next.
That's
ears,
right. That's
ears
right.
Don't care. I have been fascinated. I mean, I'm actually really, you don't know this because you're not in our tech ideas Slack, but like at least once a week I post in there and I'm like, what is the deal with AT&T, which is almost actively disinvesting in broadband infrastructure? Like they have stopped installing fiber in all these places that, you know, it'll get to like a block away from people. They're sort of cutting off DSL. They're just moving away from all of it. And there's actually a thing at the very bottom that's like AT&T, the guy in his ad said, invest in telecom, not movies. Like they seem to be just sort of moving away from having any interest in being an internet provider and just being all about like the movies now.
Yeah. I also I'm not some, you know, darling little 97-year-old man. So, you know, there's that too.
Oh.
So I'm going to wait another 40 years and then I'm going to get my fiber. That's what's
by God,
happen.
I'm getting my fiber.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Your internet is bad.
All right.
Man.
Anyway.
Your internet is bad.
That's my
stuff.
That
is true.
Is it, am I blipping out? No, I'm still there. Okay.
Nope. You're doing great.
Okay.
This time's
all
fine.
Right.
But yes.
Okay.
All right. Should we play a game?
We should. Let's. That's a good little sting.
Yay, it is right. Time for our game, half full, half empty. For example, I am half empty on Kai ever getting good internet access from Spectrum.
Yes,
just as an example of how the game is played.
All right, Drew, hit it.
Are you half full or half empty on satellite internet?
Whoa, look at that. He's been listening to the show the whole time.
I would take any internet. I just want good solid connectivity, man. That's,
you know.
I don't know.
I'm like really
it,
torn
honestly,
on it.
Right?
I think it's going to bring access to a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. Is that Elon Musk once again? Elon freaking Musk with the Starlink and all that jazz. Is that what that is?
Yep, of course. It is Elon Musk with the Starlink thing. But it is. I mean, I'm really torn on it. It is great in terms of bringing reliable access to places that don't currently have it, where even a wireless infrastructure is going to be hard to build out. Like actually earlier this week, we did two stories in a row on building out broadband access on Indian reservations. And, you know, Indian country in America is geographically incredibly varied. And like one of the things that came up is Alaska tribes being like, look, you can try to lay fiber all you want, but it's not going to work for us. We need internet from space. There are certain places in America and all over the world where it's going to be way better, but it also like is a bunch of satellites in the sky. Like it's going to change the night sky. Yeah. It's just really, I don't know. It's complicated. I guess yay for connectivity.
Well, so Sue Tyler says 100% empty on satellite. It's ruining the night sky. Comments are mostly empty. Alexander Lane grew up on satellite internet. It is terrible. So
it has historically been terrible. This, I mean, the idea of blanketing it with satellites that you can so many that you can actually see them might end up being reliable.
Yeah. That'd be a problem.
So there's that. But yeah, like it's a night sky thing. That's no joke. Hmm. It really is no joke.
Hmm.
I guess half full seems appropriate. Like half.
Just half. Half. Okay.
Yep.
Next.
Okay. Next.
Pearl Milling Company.
Oh, so that is what used to be until a name change like 2 days ago, Aunt Jemima, pancake mix and maple syrup and all that good stuff. And they have changed. I'm obviously half full on that. I'm kind of surprised it took them as long as it did to change that clearly racist brand identity. But, you know, progress.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I
think it's Aunt Jemima.
It's not always like, it doesn't always feel like the right progress. I've definitely seen people say, you know, we're less worried about this name than we are worried about mass incarceration and violence by police.
Yeah.
but yeah. every little bit counts. I'm half full.
Yep. Yep.
Next.
Half full or half empty on the vaccine from your employer?
Oh, I mean, I was like this time next year, maybe.
About my employer, but you know.
Yeah. is this a trap? It feels like a trap. It's a trap.
Once again, it's the old nobody in St. Paul listens to this, and then we're going to get, God, I think his name is Ryan in Minneapolis. He's like, I'm here. I'm listening. Look, I don't care where, assuming it's safe and administered and we're talking the major brand name of vaccines. Yes, of course. Just get the shot. Please.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I am half full that is going to become a standard part because it seems like, you know, the novel coronavirus and its variations, which are going to continue to occur, mutations, is probably going to be like a new flu. It'll be with us for a long time. And so it seems totally obvious to me that eventually there will be, just like your employer provides flu shots, they'll also provide COVID shots. It'll just be like a thing, but not for a long time.
Yeah. Did you see that? Not long after you and I talked about it on the pod, there was a piece in the Times talking about how scientists are actually thinking that this might just do away with like the common cold and a bunch of stuff. So anyway,
The mRNA, you mean?
Yeah.
Bring it. New age of medical technology. I'm here for it. Yeah. I'm half full on that. Yeah. That's for sure. Okay. Yep. Is this our last one?
How about the tipped minimum wage?
Oh.
The tipped?
Yeah.
Help.
TIPPED, tipped minimum wage. I did not know this until a number of years ago. So federal minimum wage in this country, $7.25 an hour. There's a big push now by Democrats and maybe Biden, we'll see, to get it raised to $15. The tipped minimum wage in this country is $2.13. That is to say, if you're in an occupation where you receive tips, your employer can legally pay you $2.13 an hour. On the theory that you make it up in tips, which I was way too far into my marketplace career before I learned that. And it's kind of amazing. So the new bill would get rid of that and institute a broad-based federal minimum wage. So I'm opposed. I'm half empty on the tipped minimum wage. I am full on an indexed for inflation.
Minimum wage for all.
Minimum wage, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know it was called that, but I did know that. It was a thing that happened in restaurants. But that's a hard no. That's got to go. Honestly, tipping's got to go.
Yeah.
Now that's a whole different.
There was a good piece.
That's a whole different topic, yes.
Jasmine Garst had a piece on the show this week about tip minimum wage. It was super interesting. Anyway.
Really? Yeah, no, it's terrible. Yeah. It's definitely got to go away. Yeah. It does. It feels like, I am struggling for a way to say that change occurs. It takes a long time. It doesn't ever happen as fast as you want. But like, I can't tell you how long I've been having conversations just as a part of my normal life about tipping and how it needs to go away and the tipped minimum wage, which turns out has a name and how like unfair and unethical that is. And everybody was always just like, no, this is how it is, right? But this is how it is not always how it is, which is both hopeful and scary.
Yeah.
But I choose to be hopeful.
Just because this is how it is doesn't mean that this is the way it ought to be. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
totally. Exactly. Yep.
Do we have one more? Are we done? I don't know. Oh, there we go. So instead of answering, he just plays a little music. Okay, there we go.
It
settles that, doesn't it?
All right, let's see. Programming note before we go. Monday is the President's Day holiday. We will not have a show then, and I will have no shows next week because I will be a no-show.
Boom.
I'll be off next week. Kai will be here with Kimberly Adams, so I know you're actually stoked because I feel like Kimberly hasn't been on in a long time and people are going to be thrilled to hear from her again, which I will be too. I'll get to listen. Questions and comments, though, of course, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Keep them coming and have a nice long weekend.
There we go. And if you're working Monday, thank you for working Monday.
Yeah, that too.
That too. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital and analog producer. Ben Hethcote and Stephen Bion do video for us. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and the Make Me Smart skill on your smart device. By the way, the best intern in the world, Ethan Parrott, apparently got a job there in the economy, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Congrats, good stuff. Ethan. Miss you every day, bro. Today's program was engineered by Drew Jostad, who also co-starred in Half Full, Half Empty. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. The senior producer is Donna Tam, and the executive director of On Demand is the one and only Sitara Nieves.
Also doing double duty today again, producing the actual show.
Yep.
Although Marissa does all the work, let's be honest.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.